Okay, so last time we talked about the unsatisfactoriness of cyclic existence in general and the six different kinds of unsatisfactory conditions that we face. And it's really important to meditate on all of these. You know, we talked about the general ones last time. Now we're going to talk about the specific disadvantages of each realm within cyclic existence. And this is the area, one of the greatest areas I feel that we have denial and resistance operating. Yeah? In that it becomes, part of our mind does not want to look at the faults of the situation that we live in. Part of our mind wants to kind of whitewash everything and say, yeah, there's some problems, but actually it's not so bad. You know, it's like there's a real denial on our behalf. And you'll see, you know, as I start getting into some of these topics, your mind, you know, might really start to resist. If you find that happening, just observe it, you know, observe the resistance and recognize it. You know, but then try and look beyond it, because the resistance is coming out of a lot of fear and a lot of, you know, kind of irrational emotion. But if you can just kind of notice that and be a little bit courageous to try and listen with open ears and an open mind, then you may find that there's nothing, that the irrational fears really have no basis, and that what we're looking at here is we're just trying to look very objectively at what is our situation without whitewashing things. So just be aware of the denial, the resistance, everything else that goes on, because we're just going to be talking about unsatisfactory conditions and coming to the point of just recognizing that everything about our existence is unsatisfactory at a very basic level. Yeah. And this really shakes us up at some point, because like I said, we're willing to admit that we have some problems, but actually we don't really want to change that much. Yeah. Yeah, it's like just the bad things go away in my life, but I want all the nice things to hang around. And what we're not seeing is that the nice things and the bad things are like interwoven like this, and that it's actually possible to have a happiness that goes beyond either of those. Yeah, we have to have this far-reaching mind that looks beyond just the, you know, the small concerns now. Okay, so as we start to look at the unsatisfactory conditions of individual states of existence, we're going to start talking about the lower realms of rebirth. Okay? So those of you who were here for the awesome, you know what resistance we encounter talking about the lower realms. And it's quite interesting, you know, and now it's a few months since you had those teachings to kind of look back on it again and look at the material again and what was the resistance about. Because it's real interesting, you know, to look at why we don't want to even believe that it's possible to be reborn as an animal. It's like we don't want to think that. Yeah. And it's real interesting. Each one of us may have in some corner of our mind a certain fear about it. It might be, you know, I don't want to be reborn as a cricket, you know, and I don't want to even think about it. And if I don't believe it, it won't happen. You know? And if you look, you know, that's the way your mind might be doing it. If I don't believe it, then it won't be possible for me to be reborn as a cricket. And I really don't want to be reborn that way. Or we might be afraid for somebody that we care very deeply about who died and who created a lot of negative karma, and it might be very painful for us to think of somebody we really care about being born as a ladybug or being born as a spider or a cockroach or something. And so because of our attachment to somebody that we knew, you know, just not even wanting to think of them experiencing a lot of suffering. So again, the mind blocks it out and says, if I don't believe this, then, you know, it might not be true, and then that person wouldn't be having that kind of pain. So, you know, it's good to just kind of see what the resistances are in the mind. Or there might be also another feeling, I'm me, I can't be anything else. This is me, I'm me. Yeah. And again, you know, as soon as we start to observe that and see whether it's true or not, we see that, you know, kind of who we think we are is something that isn't made of concrete. It's very transient. Yeah. So to think of the disadvantages of the lower realms of rebirth, again, I won't go into them too much in depth. You can relax a little bit. but it's good to recall them, you know, that if you're born in a life form of extreme pain, then the life is extremely painful. And if we think of just a human life where there's constant physical pain all the time, yeah, and then we just think of that as your body, your environment, your life, I mean, it is possible for that to exist, isn't it? You know, just kind of continuous pain. There's many people in human bodies who experience continuous pain. Why isn't it possible that there's just another body that's like that? Yeah. Or taking a body of a hungry ghost. You know, you look at some of the photographs, you know, coming out of Somalia now. It's human bodies, but they look very much like the descriptions of the hungry ghost realm. Big bellies, thin necks, little legs, barely can walk. Yeah. And when you're that famished, even you see food, you can't ingest it. It makes you sick. That's exactly the description of the hungry ghost realm. And that's something we know exists, you know, here with human bodies. So why not just another kind of body? That's the experience. And then animal realms, we can see very, very clearly that exist. And, you know, sometimes we just like to think, oh, animals are really sweet, and aren't they cute, and, you know, isn't that wonderful? And, I mean, I have a great time playing with a challa. But, you know, sometimes when I sit there and I play with him and I see how, you know, he gets so excited over fingers going like this or over something that you dangle, you know, it's just like, he just gets enthralled. You know, and one part I say, oh, isn't this cute? And another part, it's just like really sad. It's like there's this intelligence that's just so easily kind of deceived. You know, it's like nothing especially wonderful to get so excited about. And, you know, and, yeah. Yeah, and then just, I mean, the limitations. And I mean, I just look at him and, you know, here he is. He has so much contact with the Dharma. I mean, so many people complain, I want to spend more time with the teacher. I mean, he spends a lot of time with me. Yeah. Yeah. And my teacher had many dogs. The dogs spent so much time with the teacher, you know. I mean, I hardly ever got to see my teacher. The dogs always were in there. Yeah. But then you look at it, you know, like, how much can I benefit? You know, what does he benefit from it? Yeah, he hears some mantra, but, you know, I mean, he can't understand the teaching. And so if we think of that, you know, kind of just the pain of having that kind of limitation, and that we have experienced that in previous lives, and that it is a potential to experience that again in the future. You know, and if we really think squarely about that, it gives us some energy to avoid that, and to see that as something unsatisfactory. Another, you know, and so then the mind might say, okay, you know, the lower realm's definitely unsatisfactory. I'm going to try and get a good rebirth. I want to be born as a human being, or as a demigod, or as a god, because those beings have, you know, lots of pleasure. I mean, human beings, it's kind of a nice mix of pleasure and pain, but then you hear about the demigods and the gods, and you know, sounds good, yeah? And so the mind kind of thinks, well, you know, that's not so bad. Let's take rebirth there. And then we start to contemplate all the disadvantages and imperfections of being reborn in an upper realm, and come to see that very, very clearly, so that we come to see that wherever we're born in samsara, by nature, it's unsatisfactory. In other words, there's no, within samsara, there is no security anywhere you search. And when we talk about samsara, we're not talking about the planet Earth. It's not like, you know, wherever you go on Earth or in this universe, there's no security, there's no lasting happiness. It's not that. Samsara is a body and mind under the condition of disturbing attitudes and contaminated actions. And so whenever we take a body and mind that are under the control of these two, the disturbing attitudes and the karma, whatever body and mind we have, no matter where we're born, no matter what's going on, at the end of the day, it's going to be really unsatisfactory. There's not going to be any lasting kind of pleasure there, or security, or solace. And so this really shakes kind of the foundations of our being, because if you look, most of our life, we spend trying to find some happiness within cyclic existence. It's like, you know, let me just get away from the pain and I'll latch on to whatever happiness comes my way. And this is like having the blanket getting, you know, the rug getting torn out from under us, because somebody say, well, you can grab at all those happinesses, but they aren't going to last and they aren't really happiness. Yeah. And it's like, wait a minute. No, I don't want to I can't handle this. Yeah. But I think it's really important that we look at this, because it's only through seeing the disadvantages of our present state that we will ever get the effort and the courage that we need to arrive at a state of lasting happiness and freedom. And also by seeing the disadvantages of all of the different realms of rebirth, it cuts away at our grasping at utopia. Because part of our mind, you know, we see this so often in so much of our attitude that, you know, if only this would change, then things would be okay. Yeah, and it's so interesting. I've just been even reading the letters to the editor in Tricycle, and it makes me really sad, because it's like people are saying this person does this wrong and this person does this wrong and da 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 da, and it's kind of the underlying message is, if only, you know, all these things didn't happen, then the world would be fine and I'd be happy. And I think that's totally missing the point, because the point is, what's happening inside me? Yeah, that's the whole point. And so this attitude of ours that if only Clinton gets elected instead of Bush, or if only Bush gets reelected instead of Clinton, or if only, you know, we passed a better gun law, or if only, we didn't renew the most favored nation status for China, or if only, you know, we did this, or if only we did that, you know, if only we stopped all the loggers from doing this, you know, all these kind of things that we carry as these big, tremendous causes, kind of feeling, if only something changed, then basically everything would be okay. When we begin to understand that wherever we're born in cyclic existence, there's no lasting happiness, then we begin to see that all this kind of wishings for if only something would change is totally missing the point. Yeah? Because changing all the external things does not cut the root of cyclic existence. You know, the chief cause of our problem isn't the loggers, and it isn't Bush, and it isn't Saddam Hussein, and it isn't Adolf Hitler, and it isn't your boss, you know, and it isn't your parents, and it isn't your kids, and, you know, that's not the overriding source of all of our confusion and pain. The overriding source lies within our own mind. It's our own disturbing attitudes, our own contaminated karma. And so always, you know, trying to change outside, always wanting a return to the utopian society, trying to get back to Eden, you know, by creating it outside, it just doesn't work. And really understanding the disadvantages of cyclic existence cuts all that kind of fantasy away. Yeah. And we begin to see that the real thing that's going on is, you know, I mean, of course we have to be concerned with social issues. I'm not saying, you know, stick your head in the ground and be an ostrich. But what I'm saying is the mind that kind of over-exaggerates the importance of these things, you know, and just to recognize that as long as there's anger, there's going to be riots. You know, you can legislate all you want, you can change the economic structure all you want, but as long as there's anger, there's going to be riots. And as long as there's greed, there's going to be poverty. And you can, again, you know, change the government structure you want, all you want. You can change the educational system all you want. You can improve those things, you know, externally. But you're not going to be able to cut the root of them, because as long as there's greed, you know, there's going to be poverty in the world. Yeah, and so we keep coming back again and again and again to the real source of the problem lies in the mind. Yeah, and it lies specifically in our own mind. Yeah, not in, you know, I mean, of course other people have their difficulties and things like that, you know, but we have to really take responsibility for what we're putting out in the world instead of, you know, if only everybody else didn't have greed, anger, and ignorance. No, it's only if I didn't have them, then things might be okay. Yeah. So it's this whole meditation is really throwing us back upon ourselves and taking responsibility for what happens to us. Okay. And it's really, really important. Also, I think by thinking about all the disadvantages of cyclic existence in all of its forms, it's quite a sobering meditation. Yeah, because a lot of our, again, our kind of grasping it at pleasure, when we begin to analyze more deeply and we see that that's really not where it's at, it's very, very sobering. And instead of being afraid of that, I think it's really nice to welcome the soberness of it. Sobriety of it. Yeah. Yeah. Because all of a sudden, because if you look in your life, you know, what is it that makes you so confused? It's usually attachment. Yeah. Because we're trying to get the most pleasure out of every single common occurrence that happens in our life. And we get totally confused about how to create the most pleasure. And then we get confused because if I look for pleasure this way, then this person may not like it, then I'll get displeasure for them. But if I try and get pleasure for them, then that's not going to go well, and I won't get pleasure from it. And so we get really stuck, and our mind gets confused, and we get angry and all that other stuff. Whereas when we get just kind of put our feet on the ground and hold on, you know, wherever I'm born in this cyclic existence, it's not going to be satisfactory. Well, then, why do I need to get so confused trying to eke out every little morsel of happiness and pleasure? It just doesn't, it isn't worth the effort. And somehow when we let go of that craving for pleasure, our mind gets really peaceful and calm. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, when you let go of the craving for pleasure, that's when the real peaceful, calm mind comes. But the mind that's constantly craving for pleasure, because it thinks that there is some lasting pleasure in cyclic existence, that mind is perpetually in turmoil. We just need to look at our own lives. It's like so clear, you know.